Merkel Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Marius, Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Mumbai Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault?
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Iconic, Odyssey, Rockfin, Band.video, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks so much. We appreciate your support. There's officially 2.8 million podcasts out there. The fact that you found us is amazing. I will take it as a sign that the universe is working in mysterious ways. Thank you all for your support. If you care to, you can share this show with your friends and family. And if you are interested, since I mentioned Iconic, there's a link in the show notes that'll take you to Iconic and give you 10 free days if you're interested in trying out and seeing what they're doing over there. Obviously, all of David Icke's work is available, but it's more than that. They're doing weekly shows. They're doing their own series. They're doing making their own movies. It's pretty fantastic. You can try it before you buy it in the link and see what you think. They've been a home for this show since we started, and we certainly do appreciate the Ikes and all that they've gone through. So check it out if you are interested. Also, thanks to our sponsor, C60 Purple Power has been with us for a while now. And I love Ken Schwartz, the owner. We do podcasts together where we go over to his studio and talk about Bigfoot. It's fun. It's a lot of fun. So if you are interested, you can go to shopc60.com. Use the promo code macro to check out C60 Purple Power. It's a free radical sponge. It's the most powerful antioxidant known. It's hundreds of times more powerful than any other products out there. It was in the guys that discovered the C60 molecule wound up winning the Nobel Prize for it. So it's kind of a big deal. And there aren't too many companies out there making it, but Ken is doing it not too far from me in Boulder. So we appreciate Ken. The link will be in the description, but shopc60.com, promo code macro to save yourself a little bit of money. And support the show while you're at it. We certainly do appreciate that. And also, look, we're going to get into it today. Obviously, we have a lot going on and a lot that we need to be prepared for. But the folks over at My Patriot Supply were nice enough to make a landing page for us called preparewithmacroaggressions.com, where you can get a 4-week supply of food. You can get a 3-month supply of food. They have seeds. They have emergency coffee, whatever that means. They have water purification, air filters, and all the things that you need for camping, whether this is a voluntary camping or maybe an involuntary camping when the grid goes down. Hopefully it doesn't. Obviously, we've been talking a lot about supply chain breakdowns, and I have a sort of half serious, half joking demeanor when it comes to that. I'm not trying to freak everybody out, but I think it's important that we recognize that there are real problems with our supply chain. There's kinks in it in a variety of locations, not just China and Long Beach, but all throughout the United States. Obviously, fuel prices are going through the roof. If you are interested, you can convert some of your soon-to-be worthless fiat currency known as Federal Reserve notes and convert them into storable food that maybe you use, maybe you hold on to, maybe you give to your family, maybe you sell when it gets pretty bad out there. Whatever you're into, there's an option right now. You can go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com, see for yourself what they're doing, and we appreciate them. The links are in the show notes. So every month for 4 years or so, I go on Eric Gajewski's show, Tradcat Night. And every time I speak with Eric, it seems, he just got off a call with our guest. So we met through Eric. I was a guest on her show a week ago. And now I would like to introduce to you Celeste Solom. She is the host of the Celestial Report. You can get there by going to celestialreport.com. The link will be in the show notes as well. Good to see you again, Celeste. How are you doing?
Yeah, long time no see. I just want to give a plug upon a plug.
Please. So
Iconic is absolutely fantastic. The Ikes are doing tremendous work. I tell you, the things that I've done with David and his son really, you know, go exponential viral, as they say. And then also the C60. I take C60 every day. Of course, right now I'm on my coffee, but yeah. I did my shoot of C60 earlier. It is great to keep us. We all have to be on top of our game. So it's wonderful to be on your show.
It's wonderful to have you. It's wonderful to have you on the show because you get into some real, well, they're really important topics, but I'd be lying if I didn't say they were also very scary. And this is some of the science behind the scenes. Some of the you know, you deal a lot with nanoparticulates and EMF and the invisible enemies out there, not the terrorists that are invisible enemies, not the ones that the media tells us to be afraid of, but the actual ones that the media doesn't tell us to be afraid of. You have done some outstanding work getting into this. And we talked about something that was when I was on your show, that was both fascinating and utterly terrifying. And I want to start with it because I think that it kind of sets the tone for where we're going to go. This is when we started talking about the United Nations and we started talking about food. And you explained that there is a program that they are putting forth. Maybe it's behind the scenes right now, but it is part of their long-term plan to get us to a point where they are selling us food by the calorie. Is that correct? By the part of a calorie.
1/1000 of a calorie.
Okay.
But now, DARPA, our military black ops program, they want to sell it by the molecule food. So between the two of them, they both came out at the same time in 2019 that this is what they want to do. And we'll be looking at some of that today.
Yeah. So how do talk about Jenny Craig? You're out of business. DARPA's the new Jenny Craig. They are going to ration your calories. This is obviously, I mean, it goes without saying, this is an inhuman agenda that they're putting forth. They are treating us like livestock that need to be fed periodically, I suppose. What is the authority by which they're operating? Like who is putting them in a position where they are allowed to even consider concepts like this, let alone write white papers and talk openly about how they're going to institute this?
Well, of course, they are self-appointed and unaccountable global elitists that have always been throughout history, but they never had the technology that they have now to implement. And so once COVID came on the scene late 2019, it was the perfect mechanism or delivery system, if you will, to weaponize the world and to bring in the Great Reset. And you could think of it, the New World Order, or whatever your favorite name for it is, globalism, Marxism, whatever your, you know, how you view it. That's, I mean, any, unfortunately, as individuals, we have not that much say in the matter, but we can fight back. Like I just did a memorandum to demand food and water in my little community of 49 people that have Nazi rules. I mean, I literally feel like I'm in Nazi Germany. You can't have chickens, you can't have a well. And really, they could enact things that you can't have a garden. So I put a provision in that memorandum, which is an official document. They cannot, they must address it. They can't round file it. It must become part of the city records. And they must address it, bam, bam, bam. And if they don't, they are out of compliance in certain things. And I put in all the UN and federal buzzwords that they love. And I know my way around the system because of where I used to work. So I'm using it now to my advantage. And we'll see how it goes. The hearing is the 13th. And I'll submit it, and we'll see if I have the right to water and food in my own community of 49.
It's crazy. Now it sounds like, oh, they would never do that, right? But we just read about Australia putting forth legislation that says that they want to outlaw the people their ability to grow food. That as a citizen, you can't grow food. So here we go. They first have disarmed the Australian public. Now they want to make it so that they can't grow food. We can see where this is going. This is a dangerous slope. So here in America, we have some sort of, you know, belief that, oh, well, that just happens there. That would never happen here. But that's not really the case. They're very stealth in how they do this. They've moved these certain laws in, and instead of making it, you know, nationwide, then maybe they'll do it regionally here and there. So you've had big problems with the cities. You have big problems with a lot of these government agencies. They don't really appreciate you sticking your nose in their business. But that comes from, like you mentioned, that comes from understanding how this whole system works. And you understand this because of where you worked before. Can we talk a little bit about where you worked before?
Absolutely. Okay. So I worked for FEMA. And of course, that was before 9/11. So there wasn't a DHS at that point. So I did Y2K. I did 9/11. I did Hurricane Katrina. Of course, then after 9/11, DHS came into being. And so it was a startup agency, if you will. And so, you know, you swap. And so I did a few things for DHS, but primarily I was in programs, and I was working on a template in case of disaster for contact, and writing out what the structure is, you know, which agencies are involved, if it's an energy crisis, or which agencies are involved if it's a food situation, or let's say infrastructure. So I was working on that. And so I, you know, but you did a little bit of everything, from those wild and crazy exercises, including the zombie apocalypse,
right,
to earthquake exercises. And then oftentimes when we did exercises, we were doing the exercise, but a part of that exercise always went live. Always.
It's a common theme, unfortunately. And we've talked about this on this show plenty, because we have explained that sometimes the exercise is the cover story that gives you the opportunity to pre-position assets, people, stories, trucks, physical things, ideas, whatever, in a situation. And then if everything looks good, if the coast is clear, let's make this go live. If it's a bad situation, maybe it doesn't look like it's ideal. It stays as a drill, but in the event that you can, somebody has to give the green light, right? They flip the switch, and then, like you said, part of it goes live. And then the cover is, well, there's just a drill going on, right? That's how they do it. So you were a part of this, and you saw these drills go live.
Oh, absolutely. Like one time we were doing, I think it was a mass casualty incident north of Seattle, and we were in the middle of it and we were actually moving. It was one of the higher up exercises. There's tabletops and different, well, we were actually doing it, which is every 3 years you have to certify with the federal government. And some guy went Manchurian with like a samurai sword and was like in downtown Seattle trying to hack people up live on the streets during this exercise. Whether that was part of it or not, like when you are designing an exercise, there is also the injections. So when I was being trained to be an incident commander, I said, the one thing I want in my emergency operations center is coffee and donuts. I mean, that's what you live on. You know, anybody right. in emergency response knows that if you're police, firefighters, or emergency management, you want your coffee and donuts. So what did they do? Their very first inject was to deprive me of coffee and donuts when I was in the sim cell, you know, when I was in the process. So that was fine. And, you know, I passed with flying colors. A little bit, they didn't like how well I passed, but that's okay. I still have my challenges. I learned a lot. But
what is what's the role of FEMA? I know what we're told the role of FEMA is, Federal Emergency Management Agency, right? So there's an emergency and then this federal guy, it's like the Ronald Reagan quote, we're for the government, we're here to help, right? So it just reminds me of like, okay, so there's an emergency. The federal government says, well, we've got this team, you know, look, I always think Katrina, obviously, I think most people do. Heck of a job, Brownie. And we have this emergency response unit by the federal government. That's the cover story. What's really going on? What are they really using this group for?
So yeah, I did, in the things that I did, like during 9/11, I was coordinating with the military to check all the bridges and infrastructure in Washington state, because we didn't have any idea, nobody did, how big of a situation right. this was. What a lot of people don't know is that every single county emergency manager and their right-hand man were back in New York at that time for 9/11 for an exercise. So that left all the counties with their two top people gone. So our counterterrorism went with one person and my boss went with another person and I worked with the military. It's really important for every exercise and or event. There are objectives, like with Hurricane Katrina, there were about 20 objectives. For instance, they went in prior to this hurricane ever making land, and they gave senior citizens in a nursing home a lethal dose of whatever they gave, and they killed them outright. Confiscation of weapons, confiscation of property, troops coming in into homes. There was the Mad Max situation where they put all those people in the dome, the stadium.
Yeah, Superdome, yeah.
And they did not provide them food or water or medical treatment, no Mad Max. And so that was all by design. That bumbling mayor, I mean, he was just a patsy. He was a patsy. They had this all scaled out. And I can tell you an example of this. So the year before in Florida, there were a bunch of hurricanes that hit Florida, huge response. Mm-hmm. And so they had anticipated that there was going to be a hurricane that was going to hit the area. And even before it was like a couple drops out in the Caribbean, you know, somewhere, I asked my boss, I said, is there going to be a response to this equivalent to Florida? And my boss said, there will be no response. And that meant that they projected five, and that this, they were, you know, going to fulfill all their objectives. And they were able to complete all 20 objectives. No public outcry. Another thing that they did post-Katrina, there's something I always get the acronym. It's post-Katrina, P-E-M-K-R-A, but don't quote me on that. It was on, you can find it by looking up Katrina and reunification of children. So it was a part of the objective. So after that, there were families that got displaced. You know, if kids were one place, parents were another place. They enacted this in Congress that said, in the case, the environment is unsafe. And at the time they were saying if in case of a nuclear incident, but the language in the end was in case the environment is unsafe, children do not need to be returned to their parents. They could be held hostage at the school, and they did beta test that in Seattle. So there was a winter storm that hit Seattle, and they didn't let the kids go for 3 days. So if you went to pick up your kids, it was an unsafe environment. Now think of the implications today when they say climate change, COVID. Anytime you give your children over to somebody else, that is a transfer of custody. And you are transferring the custody of your children over to this other entity. That happens at hospitals. When you check in, you are transferring the custody of your body over to the medical facility. And that's why so many people could not get their loved ones out, because they had transferred that custody over to the medical facility. And then, you know, it takes lawyers and law enforcement to get them out. Some did, some did not.
Whoa. I remember hearing about that. I remember hearing them. They did that here in Denver, where they had an event. They took all the kids to the Broncos stadium, did something with them there, and parents showed up there and they were like, give us our kids. Like, this is crazy. I don't know what sort of plan you're doing. You didn't inform us of any of this. And it wasn't a real emergency. It was a fake emergency. It was a staged one. And I'll have to go dig into the details of it. But I do remember that. I remember thinking, whoa, if I was in that situation, there'd be real problems, because I am extremely distrustful of the government and in any, you know, and I don't care what drills you're running. My kid is, get a mannequin if you need to, but we're not going to deal with that. But you and I, it sort of kind of leads into this next topic, which is something that you and I talked about before as well. It's population management. Right. This is kind of what these groups are doing. They're trying to manage this population, whether it's the selling of food by the calorie or the molecule, if you're DARPA or whatever, or you're creating emergencies in which to change legal custody or legal oversight from you, the parent, to a school or to a hospital or whatever. Let's talk about population management. It sounds like cattle management, which of course I think is how they view us. So where are we going with population management? And that sounds like a nice way of saying, government control of people.
So a couple things you should know, and I hope I don't forget the one when we get to the food part, but anyway. So in 2012 in Thailand, there was a memorandum of understanding that is a legally binding agreement between the World Health Association, the World Medical Association, and the World Veterinary Association. They signed that they would become one. So the animals and human health became one discipline back in 2012. A lot of people don't know that. If you want to look things up on that, it's under the umbrella of One Health. That is a UN thing. And it's because of the zoonotic diseases. You know, you have to treat the people like animals and the animals like people and blah, blah, blah. I mean, it has a very deep, dark history. We could do a whole broadcast just on One Health. But that's where it originates. Do I have screen share ability?
No, we've got too many people listening in audio, so I don't turn it on.
Okay, so there is the, hold on, let me see if I can. There is a Health and Human Services population management agency. So, and it's run by Health and Human Services. So, so that's a, also a good place to check. Health and Human Services is always at the front. They were the ones in 2016 that put an 80-page communicable disease into the Federal Register of, it talked about coronavirus, it talked about Ebola, it talked about shutting down the economy, it talks about quarantines, examinations being tamed, all in here in that. That happened. It was entered in August 15, 2016. It went into effect 90 days later, October 15, 2016. And my husband and I were so concerned. We did a blog talk mini exercise, just like FEMA would do on radio, about the whole situation and how it might come down. It was all metriced out, like the devastation to the economy, the whole thing, they all knew. But it was presented by Health and Human Services. So it's, they are the tip of the spear of the population. Well, other than, I mean, at in our current government, of course, there's the UN folks and World Economic people.
Yeah. Let's talk about them for a second. They're such monsters that we just came off of a week of Davos where they plotted our future. We didn't ask them to. Where are they taking us in terms, and that normally what they talk about is usually a couple years out, they get everybody coordinated. What was sort of the takeaways from 2022 Davos that we should be concerned about? Any ideas what they were chatting about? I know it's not all public knowledge, but if you were able to gain any insight.
I think that it is just escalation into the Great Reset. So if you go to the Army Mad Scientists and you go down on the right hand side, oh, your friend is there. Halfway into the search bar, you can look up old humans. So basically, most of us are under the assumption that there would be depopulation and at this takeover in 2050 was originally quoted, and then 2030. But according to the Army Mad Scientists, it's been ushered to 2025. So that's where we're at. Is I think that they are just put. You know, that's not very long. We're in halfway through 2022, and if they want it, the old humans depopulated by 2025, that's a year and a half. So what is old human? An old human is created in the way men and women have been created throughout history. Men and women get together and they have a baby, if I have to spell it out. The new humans, however, are created in a lab. They are, or they have been, they use a human host that has been gene edited, if I might.
You can use the term.
Okay. The gene editing Vax tool, jab, whatever you want to say. And they become then a hybrid and then eventually a synthetic entity. And they host their baby. It does transfer over. We saw this at the beginning when GMO food was first introduced to the whole world, that they put fluorescent dye in it to make sure that that genetic modification would be passed down in the seed so that they could make more genetically altered crops and creatures and whatever. So they just did this application in humans. So the new humans, I don't believe they have a soul. I think you start losing humanity at that point as the further you get into it. They are one. They have the capability to be one with the quantum computer. So you won't need your cell phone. You won't need your laptop. Some of these new humans are very, have small skulls. And so those are the ones that are not going to be living very long. The brain is kind of can't grow, because if your skull size is frozen as small, they won't let your brain. So they're kind of slated for depopulation naturally. The other new human, they are born eyes, tails, advanced. They grow really fast, like at 6 months, 9 months. They can have a full set of teeth. They can be having conversations with you, high intellect. They can have the Paraca skulls, the elongated skulls. We could go down that rabbit trail, because the PCR test actually seeds in children and seeds a skull size and shape. And they can't do it very effectively with adults because our skulls are hardened. But when they do these PCR tests to these little ones under directed and experimental evolution, they are literally seeding in the shape of the child's skull and what it will be.
Whoa. Okay, so we're getting into a weird area in science that where you inject somebody with an mRNA vaccine and they become a little bit, one deviation, less human. You inject them with another one, yes. Another bit, a little bit more. And at some point, you have the same situation as you have with a genetically modified tomato. It becomes legally no longer a tomato, an organic tomato. It becomes something other than, maybe looks like it. Maybe you can pass it off as being a cousin or something, but it's technically not the same. So we're going to a place where if you can own the patent on a genetically modified tomato, then you can own the patent on a genetically modified human. Can you not?
Absolutely. Oh. And that's why they have that's why they feel that they can do kick around, and it's called directed evolution and experimental evolution, play with us, kick the tires, see, you know, what they can do. But the end result is, we are no longer fully human. And that's why we're noticing in some people, if you run into them, they just act different. Even it could be a best friend that you've had for 35 or 40 years. All of a sudden they act really different. Like either their mind's gone or they're hostile and you go, or they make no sense and you're going, what in the world? What is going on here? That's part of this process. These were all Darwinists. They still believe in the Darwin theory, but they wanted to expedite Darwin's. They didn't want to give it time for their theory to play out. They're going to crunch, like crunching the numbers, they're crunching the evolution. And that's what they're doing to us right now with the SARS-CoV-2, the nanosynbio construct, as well as the mRNA and anything, any pharmaceutical or therapeutic going forward from now on, and believe me, they have a lot in store on the plate for you, is going to edit your genome. And so that means you will be patented, and they own the patent on you, your life, what they're going to give you, your treatment. It's pretty diabolical.
Jesus. Yeah, this is really bad stuff. I had Dr. Robert Malone on our group show one night, and this was before his Rogan appearance and all that stuff. And we asked him about the technology, and he said, well, the problem with the mRNA technology is that once you turn it on, you can't turn it off. You know, it just sort of keeps going. And I said, well, who would, that doesn't sound like a viable product, who in their right mind would hire you to build something like that? He said, well, the US military, of course. And we went, oh, okay. All right. This is bad. This is not good. So we understand that these technologies are going to be sold to us as something. Well, first of all, they'll be sold to us as harmless. Oh, it doesn't, you know, or it'll help, or we can program. Then it'll be, well, you have to take it. What is the mechanisms behind the mRNA technology? We call it gene therapy. What is it doing to the genes exactly? Like, I think I already know the answer to this question, but is there a way to undo it once you've done it, or is this a permanent sort of fix?
No, it actually cleaves once. So this is a DARPA, you know, the deep dark stuff. So you get injected with it. It assembles. The first thing it does is self-assemble inside your body. Think of it as a water balloon that doesn't have water in it. And then it harvests your moisture in your body and your nutrients. And so it grows. And then it swarms. It swarms all over your body, and it crosses your blood-brain barrier, takes over your brain. But the interesting thing about it is it cleaves to every cell, every organ in your blood. And so it becomes one with you. And that's how come these new humans can have quantum connection with quantum computers and stuff, because it becomes one. They're one with the quantum computer. And this is just the beta test right now that they're doing, kicking the tires to see what effective way they can merge man and machine, which is what they've been wanting to do for a long time.
Yeah, that's the fourth industrial revolution. It's not conspiracy theory, it's conspiracy fact. It's their mission statement on the world at weforum.org. You can go there and look it up for yourself if you don't believe us. So we're not kidding. The invention of nanoparticles. Again, sell the benefits, but this is dangerous stuff. Like, what does DARPA and the, I mean, I think there's the equivalent, the HARPA, well, it's ARPA H, I guess, but the health equivalent of DARPA. We've got Wellcome Trust in the UK working on this. What is the plan for nanoparticles with regard to our health? I use health in air quotes, because it's certainly not going to be for our good health. It's just, how is it going to impact our overall health?
So basically, there's a million different things that you can touch on, but they're track and trace. They do have an antenna. They can receive messages and they can send messages. So let's say the global powers say, or you go to your doctor and they say, your doctor says, no carbs for you, Charlie.
Yeah.
And you come home and you eat a big piece of pizza when you get, you know, you're done with the broadcast and you're craving that pizza. You take it and immediately a message is sent to your doctor, to your life insurance, to your health insurance, to the enforcement arms of like the World Health Organization. And all of a sudden you're getting fines and possibly imprisonment. That is one aspect of the nanoparticles. Another thing that one of the first things that I learned with nanoparticles is that it changes the magnetism of our body and it changes the spin of the atoms in our body.
Uh-oh.
Now, yeah. And here we're closing in on a grand solar minimum, a collapse of the magnetosphere, which is our barrier from things like cosmic rays. It happens. We're in the sixth extinction level event. Sorry to tell you guys, but the last one eliminated 90% of all life. That life did survive. They did survive, and plants came back and animals came back and people came back and everything went forward. But with them tweaking the spin of the atoms and our magnetism, we may not survive this particular one if they are successful in all of their experiments.
I want my atoms to spin at the right speed. damn it. I don't appreciate these people messing with my atoms at all, but they're messing with something else too. Now they're messing with, and I don't get all weepy about America, and I don't tie a yellow ribbon around the old oak tree necessarily or anything like that. I'm an American. I want what's best. But the idea of our sovereignty being ceded to the World Health Organization is a new topic that has just recently become, I guess, semi-mainstream. Mainstream if you're looking for it, not mainstream if you're just somebody sitting in front of the MSNBC every night expecting to get the news. But they're talking about the World Health Organization during pandemics, and I'm assuming that that's a very gray area. The World Health Organization could dictate what the individual countries that sign on to this agreement tell them to do. Is this correct? This sounds like, I mean, it, you know, in a world of bad ideas coming from our government, this sounds like one of the worst ideas I've ever heard. What could possibly go wrong with the World Health Organization being in charge of all these countries? This has got to be part of the plan, right?
Well, I know that there's going to be people that disagree with me, but this actually took place on October 31st, 2005.
Really?
Ooh. Yes.
Let's hear it.
It was under the guise of the National Animal Identification System. It had three pillars. The first pillar is all property belongs to the government. Very communist. Yeah. The second was electronic identification of all life on that property. That doesn't matter, human, animal, plant, right, and 24/7 surveillance. It was viciously fought. We had core groups in every state fighting it. We were also fighting at the national level. But as they used to say at FEMA, the train had left the station, the agenda must go forward. And so we lost. It was a voluntary system. There was also something that people need to pay attention. A database was created. Everything was issued a alphanumeric code, whether it was property and or plant, animal, or human, and a alphanumeric code with a country code, asset code in the beginning. In the case of default of the country as an obligation to the global system, your property or you or your animals will be taken and seized as collateral for this. And basically what happened, we worked with attorneys, found that the government came into the first position on your property and your body, and we could go into that on another day, and then you became the second. But, you know, as the first person on your title, it goes to the government. So they did that. It was getting a bad rap as the National Animal Identification System. They shortened it to traceability. You can find this at the UN. It's at the federal level. Every state has passed it. It is now mandatory that all property belongs to the government. Every electronic identification of all, every human, animal, and plant, and 24/7 surveillance. Now, where does the World Health Organization come in? Well, there's something that, so the international, so when that happened, there was, in 2005 was a huge year. That's the year that they started the international health regulations, which is what they just were using, and they wanted to tweak the international health regulations. There, in the Americas, a lot of us were fighting the North American Union. They mm-hmm. did the North American Pandemic Plan, and they had blocked off different parts of the earth, and they each had their pandemic plan. And so ours included Canada, the U.S., and Mexico. So already they were breaking our sovereignty way back. That was probably about 2010 or so, I think. But then there's back to 2005, because this is something nobody knows about. The FAO, OIE, and UN At the general convention in May. Every May it changes. There's something called the Terrestrial Animal Health Code. There's also a diagnostics and vaccination code. And there's also an aquatic code, because anything in the sea has a different legal system than anything on the land. So it has to be treated differently. Each one of these is 1,500 pages. And each one of these, so the compendium is about 5,000 pages. And if you want, or 500 pages, no, it's 1,500 pages each. So it's about equivalent, I think, of 5 reams of paper that you put in your copier. And it's updated. It's a living, they're living documents. And so they are updated every year to expand. They never get smaller. They only expand.
Right.
And so that's really where the UN got into sovereignty, because the US then became obligated to report all these diseases to the UN, and the UN would tell us what we had to do. And all the labs, one of the last things that I found out as I was doing this template of assets for the government, I found out that okay, all your labs and hospitals have different number names and stuff. But what I found out when you get drilled down to, okay, in an emergency, who do I contact and stuff? I discovered that they were all one at that point. All labs are one, all hospitals are one, all physicians are one, in rare, with a few rare exceptions. So see, by that time, we were already pretty much compromised. Then in 2015, there's something that was called the Blueprint of Biodefense. They have a trilogy. So that was 2015. I don't know when the Apollo program for biodefense came out. I'm not sure. Maybe a couple of years ago. And it was based on the Manhattan Project. And then last month now, because we've turned into June. So in April, there is the Athena Agenda. And if you go to the Athena Agenda, you can see these all at shepherdsheart.life on my blog. I did it about, look at the Athena, the sacrificial Athena owl arises. And there's a big technological Bohemian Grove owl staring out at you. And I mean, that sucker, that document has stuff that puts you over the top. And so, and in that, between the Apollo Project and Athena, they had already inserted global governance and with the WHO and whoever else they decide at the global governance level. We had already seated, and they put it into public law. So I know everybody's distracted by this WHO thing, but they've already put it into public law. So there's something known as the invisibility algorithm. So what they do is they take like 5 things and they dangle it in front of you, like the war between Russia and Ukraine, the famine, summertime, we want our barbecues or whatever.
Right.
It could be whatever. You can change everything else underneath. And it's called Carver. This algorithm is named Carver. And that's one of the algorithms they used for 9/11. And that's how come they could pass the Patriot Act, the Bioterrorism Act of 2002, and many other different things. So it's already in public law. I'm sorry to tell people, they don't like me. They want to fight this treaty. They think it's new on the scene, and it's not. I mean, this thing's so well entrenched into our republic that it's disgusting, but that's where we are. And we have to face reality.
We're unsecured creditors of our dogs. That's wild to me.
Well, and so back when in the 1990s, when computers first came on the scene, I got onto a academia and legal forum, and they were going back and forth on who has primacy over the planet, humans or animals. I mean, this was a 10-year discussion. And they, in the end, made the decision that animals have primacy. That's over humans. That's when I started seeing, how does that translate to work? So there was a flood. It was the North Fork of the Stille River. A guy calls up and says, can I do whatever I need to do to protect my property? And it was the first time, because the Corps of Engineers got the mandate, you can't. Fish come first, not humans, fish. And so it was before caller ID. And so you knew he was going to go darn well do what he was going to do, you know? But it was the first time that we had to say, no, you can't. And down from the bowels, that's all I'll say, of where I work, up comes a person with satellite shots of this man's property. You could see every little stone, even the size of a dime. You could see exactly what was going on. They were real time watching him, eyes in the sky. So that was the first time that they did that. Now, how does that impact you? So I had a friend that went to prison. Jane Goodall then decided she needed a poster child, that no human could own an animal. So she was on the lookout. And my friend and her daughter went to Southeast Asia and went to train elephants. It was a lifelong dream. They just really wanted to do it. It was a great bonding time because her daughter was growing up, becoming a young woman. And, you know, as parents, you just want those precious times. And they went back to see her parents on the way back. You know, you're connecting flights, you know, or parents were on the way. And they wanted a fond memory. They also went to that monkey temple over there in India or somewhere mm-hmm. over there. I don't know what yep. the name of it is. I've seen pictures of it. But so they found, you know, those papers that are outside the grocery store that, you know, you can get, sell real estate or
right.
garage sales or whatever. They saw a monkey. So they bought the monkey. They took it home. And it was, you know, and a lot of people, organ grinders, people had monkeys at that time.
Right.
And not everybody had a monkey. But as a matter of fact, I visited Monterey Pier. And there was an organ grinder there. And my daughter loved monkeys, my youngest. And she stuck out her hand and the monkey bit her, you know. So,
right.
So that was one of the sad tales of my youngest child. But, so where was I go? Oh, so basically she calls me. We're getting ready to go to the Capitol to do some more lobbying. And she's frantic. She had a 21 agency raid at 4 o'clock in the morning, both her and her daughter simultaneously. They lived in different locations in Washington state, 21 agencies. And the long and short of it is she ended up in federal prison because Jane Goodall, the big ape lady, needed a poster child to say, you can't own an animal. It's illegal to own an animal. And then you just saw this. Now they're part of the biotech with the therapeutics and the gene editing things is called xenotransplantation. What a lot of people don't realize is the original construct for SARS-CoV-2, as well as therapeutics and the gene editing jab, contain like 7 different animals, as well as different pathogens, plus a payload. And so they're mixing the species. And even in our plants, there's human blood and tomatoes and rice now. And I mean, it's like crazy. It may look like food that you're eating, but it's not really the food that you know. And I really hope everyone takes a moment to check out YouTube. It's still up there. I didn't check it today, but I, you know, last time I looked, it was still there. And it's The Onion. And The Onion is known for satire. But I'm like about 10 years ago, maybe 12 years ago, I watched this thing, and it was supposedly, it was like those morning talk show hosts where there's the man and the woman, and right. they were interviewing the CEO of Taco Bell. And he was saying, you know, we've gone, Taco Bell has gone green. There's nothing from nature, allowed. And that is the UN mandate now, that we are to take nothing from nature. That's why, consequently, everything must be lab food, because we're not, that's why they're getting rid of agriculture, because we are not allowed to take anything from nature. We can only do this so that they can monitor the depopulation. But anyway, he goes on, and he's they're talking, our new chalupa takes out CO2 from the atmosphere,
right.
and we're going to melt down your straws and all the plastic spoons and put it into the meal now. So, which is true. They actually are putting polymers, plastic polymers into the food instead of the food. And so you really have to check it out. It was predictive programming. People took it as a satire. They said, oh, that's just a, you know, they're just right. sarcasm. But it wasn't. It was predictive programming of what was coming, and they were just seeding you to get ready for this thing. Shortly after that, David and I went to a town, I think it was Missoula. It was either Sandpoint or Missoula. And we saw a big billboard, and it was a Burger King sign. And it said, our burgers are so good that it grows hair in your mouth. Now, like 25 years ago, you would have thought, I mean, what's that about?
Right.
But in all the rats, when they did genetic modification on the rats, fed GMO corn and that kind of stuff, they grew hair in their mouth.
Whoa.
So they became like werewolf in their mouth. So this here was this Burger King sign saying that this is what their product does, grows hair in the mouth. But you see, most people don't know the science. And so they don't look or understand.
Well, the Impossible Whopper has 18 million times more phytoestrogen in it than a regular Whopper. And it only has 5% fewer calories. So it's not some sort of like low calorie alternative. It's just filled with a bunch of stuff. That sort of makes sense of this weird acquisition of Bill Gates buying farmland. We've got him financing or co-financing the Svalbard seed vault in Norway. We've got obviously his investment, along with a lot of celebrities and venture capital firms, into impossible meat, impossible foods, all these lab grown. Now obviously, we know that they're going to sell the benefits of this is going to help feed hungry people, starvation, right? It's never about that. It's changing us from the inside. Now, we've joked, it's kind of only a half joke about the soy boys, you know, and we make fun of them. And when I say that they're going to have to, you know, all the Antifa people, because of their soy diet, you know, they're so weak that they can't overarm the Molotov cocktails anymore. They just have to sort of like roll them or throw them underhanded. But the truth is, it really is having an impact on humans. Is this, have we, over the last generation, it seems like there's a bunch of weak people out there, physically weak, definitely mentally weak, almost like they're broken. Is this the lack of nutrition? Is this the food, the genetically modified foods, the high fructose corn syrup, the combination of all of this? Is this what's doing it, do you think?
It's partly that, and partly the frequencies. Mm. But I can testify. So I had to relocate a year ago. It was a year ago this past weekend, and that I set foot in North Dakota. And I said, for 2 months before the move, so a year and 2 months, I ate junk food. I mean, I had an organic farm in Montana, had my own water. It was pure. I grew everything. I was 98% self-sufficient.
Wow.
And so the only thing I bought was flour, sugar, which I didn't use much, but coffee. I'm a big
coffee.
So
yeah.
So I bought those things, and actually I had two coffee trees, but that's for another time. They met their demise. So I can tell you that after a year of eating junk, which stuff I would never touch, then I get to North Dakota and I find you can't buy vegetables. They eat meat, carbs, and treats. That's what they eat in North Dakota. That's not my diet. I'm a keto person. I'm meat and veg. That's it. On occasion, a treat, you know, but not really too much. And I was healthy. And actually, my husband was killed 7 years ago. And they did a major autopsy on him because they wanted to know why he was killed. It was a car accident, but they wanted to do this autopsy. They found he had the organs of a young man. No sign of disease, none. At 60 years old, he had not any sign of disease whatsoever. That was our diet. And consequently, now, after a year, I put on 50 pounds. I ache, I hurt, I feel like crap. I tell you the truth. The first thing I did last week is get my stuff out there in the garden, get my kale, which can't even buy the plant starts. The lady looked at me like I was like from Mars because I wanted kale starts. Mm-hmm. And so I got my seeds in the ground. I've got my plants in the ground. It's not the size of gardens that I had in Montana, but it's a start. It will feed me. And I could hardly wait, you know, for the let the good sunshine roll. But I can tell, I mean, I am not the person I was a year ago just because of eating crap. So I, wow. But I'm going to get back there. You know, I know that I can get back.
Let's wrap up with this. Let's talk, because you've done some real good work on this. And I'm curious about, you mentioned sickness and we've mentioned weaponization of things. EMF and the weaponization of EMF and what that does. What does that do? First of all, what does it do to us? And is there a way that we can minimize our exposure to it in a real way? You know, now I know under some people, well, we've got to retrofit your whole house or anything. What's just what are we up against with EMF and how can we sort of mitigate that?
It's a huge topic. It is, think of it as smog, a frequency smog.
Okay. All right.
And there are things you can do. You can put paint with copper. You can wear some EMF proof clothing. There's whole clothing lines now, but be careful. There's scammers out there that'll say it's EMF and it's not. So you're going to have to do your homework. I would shut things off like your router at night. If you're buying property, don't, for goodness sake, don't move next to a cell tower or a Doppler center because you're going to get fried. You're going to fry and die. So those are some of the things. I wrote a book that you can get at Amazon or at shepherdsheart.life, Electromagnetic Radiation Protection Solutions. And those are actually foods and supplements that you can eat. And you probably have many of them on the shelf right now that will protect you from radiation, from EMF, cosmic rays, and a nuclear event. How I even found out about it, my mom gave me this really funky cookbook set. And in it, it had like food trivia. And it said that the people in Japan, when they dropped the bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, that were eating red pepper. And it doesn't have to be hot red pepper. It can be just red pepper, like a red bell pepper. Did not absorb the radiation. So they did not have the damage to their bodies. So the book that I did, I really highly encourage everybody to buy it because what it does is it's alphabetical. So let's say you have cinnamon and you want to know, does it take care of radiation? You just go to cinnamon or your supplements. Do these supplements, like, does magnesium help against radiation? Yes, it does. I will give you a hint that the number one thing that NASA suggests is dried prunes, highly radio protective. So if you could put it in your yogurt, in your smoothie, anything you want, and if you take these powdered prunes, very radio protective. And for the things, I did try and get a wide variety of diets and supplements. But for those people, let's say I missed one, you know, and you want to know if this food or supplement is radio protective, what you do is type in your favorite search engine what it is and radio protective. And it will tell you whether it's that food or supplement is radio protective. Now, I'll give you a really quick tip. You're not going to find McDonald's hamburgers or fries on there, or fast food or processed food. So don't even go there. I'm talking about real food here.
Yeah. Well, we do know that the McDonald's food will last forever. We saw what they did in Iceland when they shut down the final McDonald's and then took a Happy Meal and put it under glass. And it's still there 10 plus years later, looking exactly the way it did when it was served to some poor bastard in Iceland who thought he was just getting the worst meal of his life. This is not a solution. Eating processed fast foods, there's a price. You pay the price at some point, whether it's the way you feel, the way you look, or the fact that you may not be living for much longer. Well, Celeste Solom is an author, podcaster, and apparently a farmer too. Don't you know? Where's the best place for people to find you and your work and your shows and all that good stuff?
So I have a couple, you know, I'm like all of us, we've all had to go to different, we used to all be on YouTube, but we can't do that anymore. So CelestialReport.com, my articles, and I do give you links to all the documents at shepherdsheart.life. I do have a Rumble channel, Celeste Solom, one word. And then also I have a Patreon Patreon page, and they get all the same benefits. And that's Shepherd's Heart Farm.
So. Cool. I'll put all the links to it in the description. You have simultaneously informed us and scared the hell out of us about the future, but we need it. We're adults. We can handle it. We want the truth, even if it's not, you know, what we necessarily want to hear. It's probably what we need to know. If anyone is interested, you can take this episode right here, share it with your friends and family. This would be a good one to do that with, because there's a lot of information in this, obviously. The website for me, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can follow me on Twitter at macroaggressions, and we will talk to you all again very soon.